Welcome to the Week 15 edition of X's and Omar. Another exciting Dolphins victory. Have them paced for what might be a very interesting December in Miami. Alongside Sun Sentinel Dolphins columnist Omar Kelly, I'm CBS 12 Sports Director Matt Lincoln. Another nail-biter. Mm-hmm. Didn't seem like it was going to be that way. Dolphins were in control for almost the entire game, and back came the Cardinals, tying that game there at the end and forcing the Dolphins to kick a 21-yard field goal at the end. Like I said on this show, Andrew Franks is going to have to hit a big field goal at some point. It was only 21 yards, but it was messy out there, and it was stressful. And
horrible conditions.
Never had been in a situation like that before in the NFL, and he kicked the game winner.
Okay, 21-yarder. It's shorter than a field goal. Shorter than an extra point, but fine. He did it. What was impressive was the drive that they put together.
Sure.
from Jarvis Landry and that good punt return, blocking. Special teams has played well all year. Now, they've had some hiccups here and there, but they played well all year. Walt Akins returning that extra point block for a two-point conversion. I mean,
they had the great down at the one-yard line, too, on that one punt. Akins down that ball on the one-yard
line. Akins has had an amazing season. Now, he's not the safety that we all hoped that he would become, but he's one dynamic special teams player, and special team is playing really well. But from the Jarvis return to Matt Moore's big 29-yard pass to Kenny Stills, getting him at the one, mm-hmm. to the field goal. They had some hiccups there with some Damian Williams runs, and the run almost made the clock expire. But the resiliency of this team has been their calling card all season. I mean, they have just fought and fought and fought and never say quit. There was a moment in the game, I know you saw that tweet, where it looked like, you know, we're back at those That's So Dolphins moment.
Sure.
And typically I'd be like, well, here's where the game turns and the Dolphins lose.
Wow.
And there we were at that moment again. The score was tied and I'm like, okay, and the Cardinals had the ball. And I'm thinking to myself, they're going to figure out a way to get it done. And they did.
I mean, you don't have a bigger gut punch in a game than when your quarterback gets what looks like a season-ending injury and he gets forced out of the game. And that's what they had.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill hit in the knee with the helmet. And certainly everyone felt at that point, we've all seen these type of injuries before.
When the knee starts wobbling.
Done.
Just goes like this.
It's over.
Yeah.
Even the players, you could tell,
yeah.
It was over. What do we learn? Now, Adam Gase not ready to say that the season is over yet. It's just a sprain.
Please, whatever.
Okay.
I'm not. Here's the reason why I'm not believing this whole ride. Okay, MCL and ACL. Those are two separate different ligaments. Okay, no problem.
Sure.
Both are sprained. Sprains are technically tears. We don't know what the grade is. He's got to see a specialist. He's got to get a second opinion. The minute they cut open that knee to maybe say a scope, 2 months.
Yeah.
Let's just say they're not going to cut open that knee. Are we comfortable enough to have Ryan Tannehill play with a brace like RG3 did back in the 2012 season? And then, somebody hits it and he's got a complete ACL tear like RG3. Are we interested in having Ryan Tannehill derail his 2017 season for the 2016 season?
Well, you're not interested in doing that. I'm not interested in doing that. So why did Adam Gase come out on Monday and say his season's not definitely over?
I think that they're hoping on a miracle.
Okay.
I don't believe in miracles.
Yeah.
call me the miracle Scrooge. I just think the benefit of Monday, when Adam Gase just came out and had those that just like exhaling moment where he said, it's just a sprain, it's not a tear, is that Ryan Tannehill is going to be here for the 2017 season.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it was a tear, think about it. A tear is a 9
could be a year
to 12-month rehab. And then you're really not going to get back to where you were until the year after that, if you talk to anybody who's ever torn an ACL. So the fact that the Dolphins, at worst, are facing a 4-month rehab for Ryan Tannehill, he'll be back and available for April for OTAs.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Right.
This theory, thought, hope, prayer that Ryan is going to be able to play at some point in the next 3 weeks, or maybe if they make the playoffs, like, I'm not living in fantasy land, and you shouldn't either.
And what are you accomplishing when you are putting that 2017 season at risk if you throw them out there again?
To me, the RG3, Robert Griffin III, 2012 season, anybody remember that season?
Yeah.
Anybody remember where they're like, oh, well, he could play with this sprain and we're going to brace him up and, you know, we just got to manage the situation. And then what happened? He's never been the same quarterback. Do you really? You just started seeing development for Ryan Tannehill. He is a 93.5 rated quarterback. You saw him throw into tight windows. You saw him start to evade pressure. You saw him scramble and run and gain first downs. You saw him produce big plays for the second year in a row. We are finally seeing the quarterback that we've all prayed for. Like, this guy has the talent. Somebody's got to pull it out of him. Adam Gase pulls it out of him. We need to see him in his second year of this offense. Remember, we were just talking about this last week. The second year is where he's going to make his biggest jump. It would be a crime if his second year was stolen. Mm-hmm. Like, be thankful, sit him down.
What else we saw this year is we got certainly the feeling of it in the locker room after the game was that in the past, it was a locker room that didn't believe in Ryan Tannehill. But those were depressed faces, not because their season's over.
No.
But because they feel bad for
Ryan.
They
like Ryan. Before, I could tell you, the locker room was probably 60-40 guys who liked him and guys who didn't like him. There's a large faction of people in that locker room who believed going into this season that Matt Moore was the better quarterback and could lead the team to more victories. Now, they understood the situation because we all play these political games in the NFL. But there's a large faction of people who are like, we can win with Ryan. We can win with Matt Moore. Like, Matt Moore, like, you see him out there? Like, we can win with Matt Moore. Now, Ryan won those people over. I could tell you the Ryan Tannehill of 2015, could Matt Moore outperform him? Probably. But we were never going to ever be able to get to see that. Now, could Matt Moore outperform the Ryan Tannehill 2016? Hell no.
And yet, that's the irony of where we stand now.
Yes, we'll get to see.
Is that we may have wanted to see Matt Moore in previous years, didn't get a chance to. We're ready for Ryan this year, and now we get Matt Moore. So let's take our first question from Dexter. Is Matt Moore's personality more like Adam Gase's than Ryan Tannehill's?
This is a personality question. When you ask anybody about Matt Moore, you could go ask the janitor. He will give you the same answer. California kid, easy, very easygoing, very mellow. Player, gunslinger.
Gunslinger, right.
Matt plays with an F it attitude. Mm-hmm. And some people like it. Adam Gase likes it.
Okay.
Adam Gase had to make Ryan Tannehill become an aggressive quarterback. He had to make him be aggressive and throw downfield. Same with Dan Campbell. He had to make him throw into tight windows. This play is there. You got to put it in tight, but put it in. That's good coaching. But he pulled that out of Ryan and helped him develop confidence. Matt don't need confidence. Matt, you're going to have to reel him in a little bit.
Well, that's what I was going to say. One thing that you've said about Adam Gase and why he gets along so well with Ryan Tannehill is that Ryan Tannehill does what he's told to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is Matt Moore a guy who does what he's told to do?
Mm-mm.
So why does Gase like him?
Because he's aggressive.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be, he's not going to have to force him. I think it's easier to dial a guy back than it is to make him aggressive. Because when you have to, Ryan has doubts in his mind that I could do this, I could throw this, this pass will work, this play will work. Matt's like, I can make it all work. And it might be, it's not arrogance, because there's a fine line between how Matt is, where he's just like, whatever, and the arrogance, oh, I could do that. No, Matt's just like, think about this. This guy hasn't started since 2011. Like, he's thrown 26 passes in the past 5 years. Like, he's like, if Matt plays well in these final three games, he's 32 now. He could probably play till he's like 36.
Yeah.
I mean, look at some of these quarterbacks who are backups in the NFL. You put together a successful run right now, lead this team to a 2-1 record, maybe get them to the playoffs, maybe play well in the playoffs, because, hell, who knows who you're going to be playing. You could be playing Houston in the first round. Like, Matt could extend his career, and we're talking about $10 to $15 million more dollars in his career.
And let's also remember it's 5 years of no hits.
Yeah.
It's 5 years, the less wear and tear That's on true. His body than other guys who have been around the league as long as he had. Real quick, let's get move up to from Finns 23, Jets 3. Are all the rollout pass plays that have been successful under Ryan Tannehill eliminated for a Matt Moore offense?
I don't think every single one of them is eliminated. I think that tight end under is going to still bootleg, move out right, move out left. It's still going to be there. He's not an athletic quarterback. And the one thing I can tell you about Matt Moore is he prefers to be in the pocket. Ryan excelled at throwing accurate passes on the run. He probably threw on the run more accurately than he threw stationary in the pocket. Matt, it's a little bit different. Matt wants to be in the pocket, he wants to be comfortable, and he reads the field fairly well. So I don't think you'll be doing as much play action, as much rollout, but this offense is built on the play action, so it's going to consistently be there. But instead of maybe using it 8 times a game, you're probably going to use it like 4.
All right. Let's move on and talk about this year of injuries.
Yeah.
If the Dolphins weren't winning, we would be talking about how this has been a lost year because of how many guys have been out for the year. Rashad Jones, Koa Misi, Jordan Cameron, Arian Foster, Mike Pouncey's now done for the year. Earl Mitchell, these are guys who have either not played at all or have been gone for huge stretches of the year. How have the Dolphins survived all of this?
It has to come down to coaching because there's only Rambo, just using a Bakari Rambo as an example for Rashad Jones. Bakari Rambo got here in the bye week, practiced for 1 week, played the next week. That never happens. And then he started 2 weeks later. And he's a starting safety, got an interception against the Cardinals. Look at Jordan Cameron. Jordan Cameron wasn't special, but he was better than Deion Sims.
Right.
Now, can we really say that he's better than
No.
Think about it from this standpoint with a lot of these young players that are contributing and playing. Who began the season as our running back?
Arian Foster.
Okay. He gets hurt. Jay Ajayi comes in. Jay Ajayi's on pace to be a 1,000-yard back. He's like 40-something yards away from being a 1,000-yard back. Who the hell would have expected that? And wouldn't you remember? He's the guy who got left home in the season.
I was going to say, I mean, if there's anything that we've been wrong on this show about, there's been a few things, just a couple.
Yeah.
Ajayi's emergence.
Yeah.
I
never
expected have seen
that.
It? Didn't see it.
I didn't see it. I can tell you from the very beginning of when he got here as a rookie, I didn't like his style because he wanted to bounce everything outside. Mm. He didn't know how to play in the NFL. This ain't college, young buck.
Yeah.
Like, put your head down, go forward. And he's gotten there. He's developed that game. It's coaching. To me, it's coaching. The young receivers, they're not where they need to be. Your boy Jakeem Grant, Leonte Carew, but I have a belief that in time they might get there. Even if some of these offensive linemen like Dallas Thomas and not really Dallas Thomas, Billy Turner was here. I still have a problem with the Billy Turner release because I felt like if he got the right coaching or good enough coaching on a consistent basis, he could have helped his team and you could polish him up. But, you know, hey, everybody gives up on players after a while. So it's acceptable for the Dolphins to do the same. Jordan Phillips. You know what? I'm critical of Jordan Phillips. I am. I've always said, talented player, motor doesn't run high, needs to play less snaps. When he does play less snaps, he's pretty much of an impact player. Now the question is, can you supplement the rest of your roster and get better talent so some of these guys can play less?
And these guys that we've talked about, yes, Leonte Carew has not become a guy who's been reliable, but you know they threw him out there a couple weeks ago and in his couple snaps he scored a touchdown.
Okay.
You know? And you got guys who are making plays in limited fashion that they have that can be big plays.
I say it every week. What Vance Joseph has been able to do with this defense, we've counted the amount of players on that field who actually would start for other NFL teams. I think our number was 4.
Right.
You take away Kiko Alonso and put in Mike Hull, now the number's 3. They want a game like that.
Yeah.
And they didn't do bad. Larry Fitzgerald is shut down. David Johnson is contained. You know, obviously the elements contributed to it, but they find a way to win. And they might not be able to stop anybody running football, but they find a way to win, and that's what you want, yeah. Right?
I mean, you almost in this Dolphins season in a nutshell is we talked all week about Mike Hall, and yeah. In his first drive, he makes an interception. I mean, that's this Dolphins season in a nutshell. Let's take our question from Jade. Do you think it will help in Ryan Tannehill's development to sit and watch a few games on the sidelines?
I don't think it can hurt. I think to learn, be there with Adam Gase and learn the thought process of how his brain works and play calling, to be there sitting on the sidelines and to say the defense, I think that will help him. Mm-hmm. I think just the understanding, the bond, the camaraderie, you know, Matt Moore had been doing it. This is why I'm a little optimistic, because Matt Moore had been on the sidelines with Gase, calling plays, sending in signals. So it helps him in terms of understanding Gase's thought process. So I think Ryan could benefit from getting that opportunity, not just in the film room, but actually watching the game live.
And just think about, you talked about next year being a big year. They've gone through these battles before already. Now, Ryan and Gase, now they go into the offseason where last year, don't know each other, don't know anything, you know, yeah. Just now having had the experiences together that they've had.
Ryan has won over so many people, and I think it starts with Adam Gase, because at the beginning of the year, Adam Gase wasn't really sold on Ryan. He wasn't like, oh, this is my guy. Right now, Matt Moore could lead the Dolphins to a Super Bowl. Adam Gase will still tell you, this is Ryan Tannehill's team,
right.
And he's going to be the quarterback when he comes back.
From Robert, are the injury concerns with Mike Pouncey reaching a point where the team needs to start thinking about the future?
I think the team needs to start thinking about the future from a depth standpoint, especially getting somebody on an interior position that can be a quality center. Yes.
You mean someone who's maybe taken an NFL snap before, or not someone who's just taken off the scrap heap and thrown?
Anthony Steen has taken an NFL snap, I'm just saying. I think they need to make it a priority to draft the best center that can transition to guard and hold you over.
Right.
Here's the issue with Mike Pouncey. Every time Mike Pouncey has a hip injury, what is he doing? He's rushing himself back to play for his team. This is the first opportunity Mike is going to have the hip addressed in the entire offseason, get it cleaned out, get it repaired, do an entire extensive hip rehab. I wouldn't even play him in OTAs, practice him in OTAs. Mm-hmm. My focus would be he'd be on the Cam Wake program. Get Mike ready for the regular season. I don't know if I'd play him in the exhibition season.
Right.
Because we have seen the difference of a healthy Mike Pouncey. Mm-hmm. Those second level blocks, those Jay Ajayi 200 yard games, that's Mike Pouncey. JFJ broke a lot of tackles, but 6 yards down the field is when he's got to make his first break. Mike Pouncey is an impactful NFL player. Problem is he can't stay healthy. Same thing with Brandon Albert. Brandon Albert showed me his wrist the other day. Man, his wrist was double the size of the initial wrist. This wrist was half the size of the fractured wrist.
Right.
Swollen, can't move it. They brace it, they put it in a brace in a position so he can pass block. So he can't bend his wrist, but they put it in a brace in a position so his wrist is like this all game. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what guys fight through to make it through the season. And the same thing with Laremy Tunsil. 70%, shoulder, messed up, probably needs to be cleaned out at the end of the season. He's fighting through it to make it to the end of the year. The problem with Mike is continuing to fight through it has made the issue worse. And Mike is owed $2 million next year, so you're not going to cut him. If you want to try to force him to restructure, you're going to back yourself into a corner, because you're going to send the wrong message to your locker room, and then Mike's going to be like, I can't throw up the bird. Mike's going to give you the middle finger and wave bye-bye to you.
Right.
So you gotta rally behind him. You got to do the best things that you can to make sure that he's medically right and ready to play all 16 games in 2017. But keep in mind, he missed 2015 not because of the hip, but because of the foot.
Right.
So, like, let's calm down on all these. Yes, he's going to have 4 hip procedures, but all of them are caused by the fact that he keeps rushing himself back.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take our next question from Hernan. If Xavien Howard returns from his knee injury, would he fill in at nickel cornerback?
Vance Joseph was very optimistic that Xavien Howard is going to be able and capable of playing against the Jets, even though it's probably going to be a snow game. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with Xavien Howard playing with a bad knee on a snow game. Coaches have always said Xavien Howard, when he is ready, when he says he's ready to go, he'll play. I talked to him last week, and he did not feel confident nor comfortable with the knee. Video's up on the Sun Sentinel if you don't believe it. The kid just was just like right. Cutting, changing directions. It's very hard to play cornerback. And the last thing you want to do is go out there and have him struggle. I would say conservatively, I play him in the season finale. Now, to answer the question, no, he can't play nickel. He's never played nickel. Nickel's a specialized position. Bobby McCain, Michael Thomas play nickel.
Right.
Nickel is a hybrid position. You have to have great change of direction. Not saying that Xavien Howard doesn't have great change of direction, but Bobby McCain has been groomed to be the nickel. Michael Thomas has been groomed to be the utility hitter. Those are your nickels.
All right. Let's move on and talk about this game this weekend. It's a Saturday night showdown in East Rutherford, New Jersey, as the Dolphins take on the Jets for the second time this season. Todd Bowles' crew is in some serious trouble. Bowles may not have his job by the time next season comes along.
Let's not do this.
I said may.
He's got 10 wins in 2015.
Okay.
How many injuries does he have?
I'm just saying. The perception there is that there is certainly... I'm not saying he should be fired. That's not. Don't turn it on me. Just saying that...
If the Jets...
His seat's hot. You're going to disagree that his seat's hot?
His seat's warming up. It's like Joe Philbin, Escott.
Yeah.
The I believe in Todd Bowles from a coaching standpoint. You don't come out of your gate as a rookie and win 10 games. Adam Gase is fighting and clawing to win 10 games.
Right.
We're like, Adam Gase, he can walk on water. Todd Bowles walked on water last year. His team didn't make the playoffs, just like the Dolphins probably won't make the playoffs.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, he's boo-boo. Because he can't do anything right? Because he's got a ton of injuries? Because he's on his third quarterback? Like, let's take things in perspective. I did expect the Jets to be a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
So throw me on the pile of people who will say the Jets are not meeting expectations. But they've got an aged team. How old is Darrelle Revis?
I don't know. How old is Darrelle Revis?
I don't know. 30? Forever.
Three?
He's a fossil. How old is Brandon Marshall?
He's getting up there, too.
Okay. Nick Mangold. Up there a little bit in age. Matt Forte. Sometimes age catches up to you in the NFL. And I think that's the situation that the Jets are facing.
In many ways, the Dolphins and Jets are flip-flopped from where we thought they were going to be.
They have flip-flopped. That's a very good point by you.
What is going to present the biggest challenge? Do you think there is one as the Dolphins take on the Jets on Saturday night?
Brandon Marshall is always going to be a very hard assignment. Bobby McCain... Brandon Marshall goes inside the nickel. Bobby McCain is not about to defend Brandon Marshall inside the nickel. Mm-hmm. Brandon Marshall likes to physically abuse his cornerbacks. Byron Maxwell is going to be shadowing him all game. We saw how they played the first game. Yeah, Brandon got him for two penalties, which, you know, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But Brandon was limited to 5 receptions. Didn't really have that much of an impact in the game. And it will be in a redemption game for Brandon Marshall. So that, to me, is going to be the biggest challenge. We don't know if Matt Forte is healthy enough to play, but Matt Forte, man, he chew you up the last time, as has just about every tailback in the NFL. So that stopping the run is a priority. Dolphins are giving up 134 yards per game. And the defensive line is just...
not great.
Yeah.
Not great. Okay, let's take our question from Kevin. Knowing most NFL games come down to one possession, is the fact that Finns are now winning these games luck or more proof of the culture change?
I will not say there is proof of the culture change until they get to 9 wins.
Okay.
I've been very consistent with that. You can't tell me an 8-8 season with a 1-4 December record is culture change. Because I've seen that story before.
We've seen that,
2013, 2012, probably 2010. Like, I've been on that ride before. You got to show me you're a winner. And I think Gase and Vance Joseph have what it takes from a coaching staff to build a winner. Now, the question that I do have moving forward, because I have said this from the beginning of the year. You are my witness. Mm-hmm. You can testify on my behalf.
Sure.
I don't think this roster is very good.
Correct.
I don't think, despite the wins, I still don't think the roster is very good. They are finding a way with scraps
right.
to win. Now, the question I have moving forward is, can Mike Tannenbaum and can Chris Greer build a better team, supplement this team? They will conservatively have $40 million in cap space. That don't mean you can ball till you fall and just go crazy and make it rain like Steve Ross likes to do and just go sign another Ndamukong Suh. No. Spend wisely on young, talented players who are trending upwards like the team did in 2008 when they added a Randy Starks. Or spend wisely on young players that can give you slight better performance, and then coach those young players up. That to me is the next step moving forward, and it's on, because you can't rely totally on the draft, because as we've seen, a lot of these draft players have not panned out so far. Laramie Tunsil, and then what else has this draft class given you?
Not much this year. No.
Okay, not much this year. So spend wisely in free agency. Hopefully you have another good draft, and hopefully this coaching staff can get these second and third year players to elevate their level of play and take it to the next level.
But before we really talk about offseason, there is still a job to do, and that is to find a way to get to the playoffs.
Yes.
Which is still certainly in the realm of possibility. Let's take our next question from Luke. Does Kenyon Drake deserve more playing time? Is he one of these two or three, one of these rookies that maybe deserves to be out there a little more?
Who's he better than? Is he better than J.J.?
No, he's not.
Is he better than Damian Williams?
Not in Damian Williams' role, no.
Okay. Well, his role would be Damian Williams.
I guess if that's the case, right.
He can't block as well as Damian Williams. He can catch as well as Damian Williams. But has he proven that he's a runner?
Yeah, no.
I would say, I will be generous and say, this is the opportunity. The one thing I've learned from Tony Sperano and Joe Philbin, they both said this. You don't want to get to the end of the year and say, man, I wish I would have played that guy more. I wish I would have had more film on him so I know, or he knows, or he's used to the speed of the game. And I think that that is important, that you do play some of these young players in the final three games of the season, whether you're making a playoff push or not, because the last thing you want to do is wake up in March and say, damn, I wish Kenyon Drake and Leonte Carew, and I'm not going to say Jakeem Grant, Xavier Howard. I wish they would have played more so I can see what we have.
I don't know. That sounds like the Dolphins of old. You say that's the last thing you want to do. I think the really last thing you want to do is not say, man, we would have won that game if I gave five more snaps to Jay Ajayi. Instead, I gave him to Kenyon Drake.
Okay, that's a valid point. I'm looking big picture. See, I don't believe this team can make the playoffs.
Okay, why not? First off,
give me your magic.
Why they can
magic numbers?
We're talking about 10, right?
Okay, yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't think they can get to 10 wins,
hold on.
If you don't think they
had 10
wins,
Denver has to flop.
Okay,
Denver, the champions, have to flop. Okay, continue.
All right, Denver plays the three best teams in the AFC.
Are they the champions?
You may remember, but the quarterback that led them to a championship,
he couldn't
ain't on
throw
that
the ball.
Team anymore. Okay. Ain't on that team anymore.
All right, all right.
Okay?
All right.
And the Simeon character, a guy who many people didn't even think belonged on an NFL roster,
okay,
is beating your guy, Paxton Lynch, to be the quarterback of that team.
Yeah, to go there. Okay. All right, no problem.
Okay.
All right.
Three games. There's three. We're not saying the Broncos have to lose all three of those games. Mm-hmm. But do you like them to beat Tom Brady at home?
No.
Okay. Do you like them to beat Kansas City, the team that everyone thinks is now maybe the best team in
toss-up. Kansas City falls apart in tough moments.
Okay. Do you like them to beat the Raiders on the
I
final game of the season?
I don't buy into the Raiders.
Okay, okay,
so
that's fine.
So I could see the Denver Broncos going 2-1 in the final.
All right.
I'm not
you're
buying
sa- But you're
over.
Saying it's a toss-up, the Kansas City game, right?
Yeah.
So you're saying it's a 50-50 chance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then you're saying, basically, you think the Dolphins are going to go 10-6?
Let's just say they're good. I don't. And here's the reason.
Okay.
Here's the reason I don't think the Dolphins are going to go 10-6.
Okay.
Not that I don't believe that there's a culture change, or not that I don't buy into Adam Gase, or not that I don't think Matt Moore is a good quality starter, because I do. It's hard. No matter how good the Jets and the Bills are, it's hard to sweep them.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about sweeping both of those teams in the snow in the same year? Like, that's tough. Or if you'd like, lose to one of those teams, and then beat the Patriots in the season finale, which you might do based on what the Patriots had to play for. But if Kansas City is as hot as you say they are, shouldn't the Patriots be worried or focused on owning the AFC division? Because the last time they lost in the season finale to the Dolphins
sure
and lost home field
yes,
advantage,
they
that cost them.
It did, for sure. I think I disagree with you in the sense that it's hard to beat the Jets and Bills because it's been so long since the Dolphins have done that. But when was the last time the Dolphins were good? Okay? And so if we believe that this is a Dolphins team that has...
They're better.
Are
we saying they're good? Are we ready to say the Miami Dolphins are good?
Yes.
You are.
I'm ready
I'm not.
To say a team that is 8-5, that has found ways to win, to go 7-8
resilient.
In toss-up games. 7-1 in toss-up games. Resilient. Keeps finding ways to win.
You know why I don't believe that they're good?
Okay.
Show me the team that they've convincingly smacked.
The Steelers.
All right, one.
No, you're right. The 7 of their 8 wins have come right down to the end.
Oh, my gosh. Like, yeah. And they literally want to hand you the victory before
sure.
they rip
right.
it from the clutches of death.
Yeah, the Niners game in particular.
Yeah.
Is the one that...
If I had seen this team smack somebody, and I'll give you the Steelers.
Sure.
Yeah, you hurt Big Ben. You don't think Steelers would have come back if Big Ben was all right?
I mean, they probably... Okay.
I will give you the Steelers game. You've had one convincing win all year. I cannot say that you're good. I'll say that you're resilient. I'll say that you're scrappy. But I'm sorry. Jets are playing for Todd Bowles' job. Buffalo's playing for Rex Ryan's job. Yeah, everybody knows everybody loves Rex.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a show called Everybody Loves
for
Rex.
Sure.
How often has Rex Ryan ruined a Dolphin season?
Yeah, it does happen.
It's the number one thing on his resume. He walks into a meeting room with the owner and he says, you know, I've ruined the Dolphin season 6 times already. and the number two thing is like, my record against Bill Belichick, I got 3 wins. But, you know, Rex loves to ruin the Dolphin season. So even if you beat the Jets and you walk into that game in Buffalo.
Yeah.
In a blizzard, because I always expect the worst in Buffalo. You know Rex is going to want to ruin your season?
Yes, you do know that. But you also know that the Dolphins could be going into that game knowing that if they win that game, they're in the playoffs.
I've been there before, 2013.
You haven't been there before with Adam Gase.
All right. True. Very valid point.
All right. Unfortunately, we missed some of our questions, and we've already got the...
We got overtime.
So we'll get some more questions in overtime. Prediction this weekend. We'll talk about the Bills next week, but what about the Jets this week?
I'm going to predict the Dolphins' victory, 24-13. I think that this is the game where you're going to see their best. I think that this is the game where they're going to rise to the occasion and finally produce a convincing victory just to build you up to next week's showdown against Rex Ryan.
I think weather's going to be nasty. I think it's going to be a night game. I think it's going to be close and gross. And I'm taking a 16-13.
Close and gross.
But the Fins find a way to do it again.
All right.
So if you're watching us live, stay tuned and we'll answer some more of your questions on X's and Omar. Just send us the questions using the hashtag XOmarR on Twitter or right here in the chat room. And of course, you can also listen, take the show with you wherever you want by listening to our X's and Omar podcast. Just search for iTunes, on iTunes, X's and Omar.